Welcome back to Travolting Presents The Fraser's Edge, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Rental Family. Enjoy the episode.
I just want to, it's important to know.
People are amazing.
People are amazing. I just want everybody to know that intro, Jeff had to pull out off the dome with only one rehearsal.
Yeah, we completely forgot that we had to do a different intro because it's not a Robin Williams movie.
It's not a Robin Williams movie. We are back with our homeboy, Mr. Brendan Fraser.
It's true. Brendan's back.
Brendan's back with the Oscar already in hand.
This is like a real Brendan is back thing.
Yes, this is a real Brendan is back because
in a way that the other three things we've covered have like come close to, but this is like a real Brendan's back thing.
Because we did, you know, it was the whale, and then he had his supporting role in Killers Flower Moon, then he had Brothers as a supporting role. Both Killers, I feel like Killers was filmed during or before The Whale, do we think? Or maybe shortly after The Whale, but it was before his Oscar win, for sure.
Yeah, they were around the same time.
Yeah. And then Brothers was, that was, I think, filmed well before.
Yeah, that was a pre
That was a pre thing deal. That got delayed in post.
Yes.
And then released later. It was released on the scale of Peter Dinklage season 8 Game of Thrones and Brendan Fraser post-Oscar win.
Yes.
So this is truly the return of Brendan Fraser's first lead role since he's won his Oscar.
Yes. It's essentially his first like major leading role. Discounting The Whale. It's his first like major studio leading role since I'm scrolling back here. But wait, none of these are like real movies. Fundamentally since like Furry Vengeance, I would probably say.
Furry Vengeance, before The Whale, you mean?
Yeah, before The Whale.
Oh, his like lead role, sorry.
In terms of like a major studio project. And The Whale is like a major project.
Yeah, I mean.
So it still counts, but.
Furry Vengeance, I mean.
Furry Vengeance is like Extraordinary Measures, that's a real movie.
It is a real movie, but it's like a Christian-y real movie. Yeah. Then there's Inkheart. I really think Inkheart. Which is crazy.
Now, I would count Extraordinary Measures and Furry Vengeance, regrettably.
Yeah, you say Extraordinary Measures.
But then like after that, like Standoff onward, that's like things that don't count. Things that are not a whole lot of soul.
People are amazing.
It is so much quieter than I thought that I remember.
I
think anybody driving just straight up would not have heard that because he's such a low register.
Hold on.
People are amazing.
It is so fucking quiet. Jesus Christ.
To be clear, I love this movie, The Whale. We've talked about
it. Yeah,
we're not relitigating The Whale today.
What we are litigating is Rental Family.
Yes, which... A couple things to say off the bat that I feel like are very important that this, we do have to say, spoiler warning, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
This movie, we're recording this on a Sunday. The movie
came out on Friday.
So this episode is going to be released the Wednesday after the movie's been, Fraser Fridays.
Yeah, Fraser. Well, it'll still be we're not going to randomly have a Friday release.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll still release this on Wednesday. But like, so to that degree, this episode has been released literally less than a week before this movie's been out.
Yes.
It came out on TIFF a while ago.
Yeah,
September.
It had like
it's
like
had a pretty good festival run. But that being said, major spoiler alerts. I would not be upset.
Yeah, it's crazy when he dies. No. Oh.
Oh shit. Yeah, no.
That doesn't happen.
But for folks listening, it would behoove you I'll say this. This is a movie you should watch in theaters. This is a movie you should go see with your friends and family. It's kind of an all quadrants hit. What did you say? No, yeah. There's a lot of fucks and there's a lot of shits.
Are there a lot of fucks?
Actually, I don't know.
I think this is PG-13.
This is PG-13. Yeah, you're right. It is PG-13. I'm thinking of a different movie that we're going to cover today.
It's a PG-13. I would consider this. I wouldn't say this is like a family movie, by any means, but I would say this is like,
you could definitely bring like your teenage kids.
Yeah, you could bring a teenage kid. This would work.
But you don't think families could go see this? Like,
I think it's.
Is that a little too mature?
The topics are...
There is, like, sex workers and things like that.
Yeah,
and
the topics are, like, just a little too...
A little too mature, yeah.
And I don't even mean, like, in an inappropriate way.
Right.
More so in just, like, a... I don't think a five-year-old's going to get much out of this movie.
Yeah,
even though there
fair.
Is, like, a large subplot with a kid.
Yeah, right. Okay,
I think this
fair.
Is, like, an honest-to-God PG-13. I think, like, yeah. 13 or older is going to enjoy this movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I think this is a pretty winning movie in the sense that, like... It's hard to have. It would be hard to have a strong negative feeling against this movie. I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like even if you didn't like it, it'd be hard to like muster like hatred for
it. Well, like, and listen, the reviews are still like coming out.
Yeah. But they're very positive.
But they're very positive. I can fathom people going into this thinking like, oh, it's a little too positive sometimes.
Yeah.
Like it's too wishy-washy and too whatever. I don't have those reviews. The thing that I wanted to say though is like, you know. There would be movies we might cover and be like, hey, we're going to spoil it for you, but don't worry. We don't want you to go see this in theaters, so it's fine.
Yeah.
For this movie, if you want to take like an extra week before you listen to this episode, I highly recommend it to give you time to go see this movie
see
in
this
theaters.
Movie.
Go see this movie. So spoiler warning, this is for folks who have already watched the movie who don't care about spoilers because they've
already
seen it.
Go see this movie in a theater. You'll have a good time.
You'll have a good time. Now, to that point of how good it is, because I also want to start off the bat saying like, Jeff, you and I have like, pretty distinctive taste in movies.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say we have a lot of overlap.
Yes.
But like, there's different things we're more interested in than the other.
And we watched this movie, like just you and I in theaters.
Off the Dome, top four movies.
Shut the fuck up. I hate that. Jurassic Park, AI, Sing Street, and...
See, you just said you hated it, and then you did it.
Rocky?
Hell yeah!
Maybe right now it's Rocky.
You and Jimmy Carter locked in on the Rocky. I found a list a few days ago where it was like President's favorite movies, and Jimmy Carter's was Rocky, and I did not know that.
Okay.
He like called Sylvester Stallone and was like, "Hey Sylvester, I just want you to know I really like your movie."
Yeah. Top four off the dome for you.
American Graffiti, Empire Strikes Back, Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, Strange Days.
Very good.
Secret fifth contender, Nixon. Nixon. Those are my top four.
Not Frost Nixon, just Nixon.
No, just Frost. Get the fuck out of here. Mm. I only want Nixon.
You only want
I want
Nixon.
I want Anthony Hopkins losing his mind for 3.5 hours.
Yeah. But all that to be said, I felt like you know we saw the trailers of this movie. We saw the reviews coming back positive for this movie, and you texted me and you said, "I think you might be overpowered in this episode."
Yes.
Because this
no, like, I think you might be too powerful. This
was giving very like Stewart movie energy. Yeah. Which, for the folks in the audience who haven't picked up on this since the 4 years we've been fucking running this podcast, I love movies that have, like, kind of, like, a family dynamic.
Stuart likes a feel-good movie.
I like a...
I would say you like a feel-good movie.
I don't even know about that, but, like, because I love The Iron Claw, and that's not a feel-good movie.
Yeah, but you can like more than one thing, but I do think, like, fundamentally, you like a feel-good movie.
I do like a good feel-good movie, but anything that's got that, like...
You like a realistic feel-good
movie. I like a realistic feel-good movie, and I like movies that deal with, like, complicated family dynamics. Because I think that's something that speaks to my personal backstory and things that I really enjoy. And I like the... personal growth, like the, you know, movies like fucking like Rocky and Creed, just like the bettering yourself as an individual kind of movies and overcoming obstacles, all those things, like love those type of movies. And I saw that we saw
Have
the trailers.
Doctor Sleep?
Yes.
Okay.
I was lukewarm on Doctor Sleep.
So good.
But I haven't watched it in a while. Yeah. So that all being said, we went into this thinking like this has got big Stewart movie energy.
Yeah.
And graciously, we found like there's actually a good amount for you as well.
No, I think like the thing that we locked in on is so the fundamental like plot line of the movie is like he's helping like essentially there's two main story arcs of people he is pretending to be people in the lives of.
Yeah.
There's a little girl and there's an old man. And the little girl storyline is
extreme. It's the father storyline.
It's a like a father daughter dynamic.
Yep.
It's all about like being a father and being there for a kid.
Yeah.
And it's very Stewart energy.
Very sequence. Stewart-coded, yeah.
And then the other storyline is about like an old actor past his prime, struggling with dementia, who's trying to like have one final good memory of the man he used to be.
Which
before he loses everything, which is extremely Jeff-coded, because I love movies about sad old men.
Yeah. Yeah. So
America's number one liker of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny present over here.
Yeah, exactly. So
why is it because of the car chases? Is it because of the action scene? No, it's because of the part where Harrison Ford's like, I lost my kid and my wife.
Yeah. So Jeff and I both walked out of the theater very pleasantly, you know, amused.
You're pleased.
I cried once, but I like felt like I was on the verge of choking up a couple more times, but a scene that I cried, we'll talk about. Context. There's some good context to this movie.
I mean, this is the context for Brendan is like this is his first post Oscar booking.
Yeah, there's not much Brendan context. It's more like historical context.
But the one context for Brendan is after he wins his Oscar for The Whale, he gives an interview where he's like, "I'm trying to be selective about the first project I take."
Yeah,
because like I don't want to just like jump into the first things I get and then like accidentally torpedo my career.
Yeah. Again.
And so he's like, I want to be selective and I want to pick something that appeals to where I'm at right now in my career and something that like is fundamentally right for me. And I think this is a very smart, it's a very safe choice for him ultimately.
Yes,
but I think it's a very smart choice.
Yeah.
He picks like, because the Whale I would not describe as a feel good movie.
No, but like not in the slightest.
Ostensibly his goal, which I think in the constant movie is a failure, is The Whale is attempting to be a movie about empathy. And I think that in his whole like press tour for that and his Oscar campaign for that was, you know, it's about empathy and like bettering yourself and redemption and whatnot. And so I think he was interested in kind of keeping that train going with his career.
Yeah.
And that's where ultimately this movie comes out of is like Hikari, who's the director of this film, who did the show Beef. I don't know if you watched Beef. I didn't watch Beef. People liked Beef.
People liked the show. Popular show.
But Beef was very popular. It was a success. It kind of gave her the opportunity to have a little blind check out there. Make a movie that she wanted to make. And this is what she chooses to make.
This movie reads that like Brendan Fraser's casting gives it its budget.
Yes.
100%.
Brendan Fraser's casting, but also like the success of Beef is what like gets it made in the first place. Or like what gets the script to Fox Searchlight. And then it gets packaged and made ultimately. But what's the historical context you wouldn't bring up?
Just, you know, the idea of the rental family. So I mean, this movie's directed by Hikari. You talked about it. This movie was fully made in Japan, mostly in Tokyo, but in other places as well. But something that I looked up, and I was looking at some interviews and pressed for this movie, and a lot of the questions that come up is like, so is this like a real thing that is offered? And it is. And not only is it a real thing that's been offered, it's been a thing in Japan since like the 90s, actually, that this idea that you can rent out a person to fulfill a role in somebody's lives for the emotional gratification of it, like renting a father to walk you down the aisle in your wedding, or renting like being a parent who wants to rent a child.
Yeah.
For their first baseball game or something like that, or renting a friend to play video games with you, renting somebody to cry with you about something. Like, so this has been like an ongoing thing that's become a bigger industry in Japan since it started in the 90s. And it made me think, because there's a part in the movie that gets to this, which maybe we can wait till then to flesh this out more, but there's a part of the movie where Brendan's having this conversation with, gotta figure out the actor's role in this, Takehiro Hira, who plays Shinji.
Yeah.
He is the guy who owns the rental family agency. And Brendan, he's filling in the context to Brendan on like what they actually do. And Brendan asks like a lot of the obvious questions that like people from, you know, America or other countries would ask the questions. Like, well, like, wouldn't they just like find somebody who fills that role without paying for it? If they're alone, do they get therapy? And Shinji responds with like, well, there's a very different conversation about mental health in Japan, and people aren't as open about their mental health problems as they are in like America or other places around the world. And so that really stuck with me. So I dug into that a little bit more. And full disclosure, like, first off, like, I'm a 30-year-old white guy who's lived in like the Midwest for my entire life. Geez. I have not left the country once. I don't even know anybody.
Never been to Canada?
Nope, never been to Canada.
That's weird.
I went to like Niagara Falls, but we never went to the
Canadian. You never went to the other side?
No, never went to the other side.
I go to the other side.
I know. I hear the other side's pretty good.
That sounds pretty good.
Never been to Mexico. You know what does... Never been to like Hawaii or anything like that. Never been out of the estates.
Been to Guam?
Nope.
Mm. I don't know why I would have thought you'd been to Guam.
I grew up poor, Jeff.
I just like saying Guam. Say it. Say Guam.
Guam.
That's good, right?
Yeah. But so anyway, the research that I did, take all that, this is with a grain of salt, and also, you know, as somebody who's not been inundated in the culture, but I guess it's the idea that like in Japan, there's that very much emphasis on your personal, true, honest feelings and like the social viewpoint of your life. And the separation of that is the main crux that differentiates, you know, people like in other countries. I'm mainly going to use the U.S. as like a differentiating example here, like the U.S. versus Japan. Whereas like in the U.S., we're a little bit more open about, you know, the social constructs that don't quite look as cookie cutter as other families do. Yeah. There absolutely was a time where if you were like a single parent raising a child, be like, oh, there's a little bit of a thing to that, right? Yeah. Like nowadays in the U.S., like we don't even think twice about single parent households or a gay household or anything like that. Or
well, most,
yeah, I guess
60%,
60%, right? But still, whereas like it's not even in that sort of discriminatory viewpoint necessarily in Japan. I would say it's
ultimately just like it's a very traditional society.
It's a very traditional society that takes a lot of pride in like the traditional viewable standing. Yeah. Like it's like you present yourself in a way in Japan that is very important for the social. Basically, it's the idea that nobody makes a fuss in public.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. It's like nobody makes a fuss in public because we're all about like cohesive social society and things like that. And we don't want to like, you know, but whereas America, we're very much more like a country of individuality and expressing yourself and in your honest ways and things. And those are that's a very different sort of side in Japan that, again, for me, the little research I did, I still don't fully comprehend or understand it. I'd love to talk to somebody, you know, who's from Japan and has been like inundated in the culture, could really fill me in on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that was really interesting because you feel the honesty in that in this movie. And Brendan plays that like surrogate role for us as the American audiences who aren't sure about what purpose this fulfills, but he sort of gets it in the movie, you know?
This
movie's made for an American audience.
Yes, this movie's made for an American audience.
Yeah.
Hikari was born, the director and writer, was born in Japan, but moved to the U.S. At the age of 17. And has lived in the U.S. ever since.
Yes.
And became a director and went to USC's film school.
Mm-hmm.
Something I think is relevant is there has been a movie made about this exact topic before.
Okay.
Called Rental Family, Family Romance, LLC. It was directed by Werner Herzog. And it is notoriously like, in comparison to this movie, a much more cynical, view of this topic.
Family Romance LLC, 2019.
Yes.
So this is a recent movie.
Yeah. It's a 20
screened at Cannes. Oh, wow.
This one review I found for Rental Family, is like mostly compared by David Ehrlich is mostly comparing the two films.
Mm-hmm.
And in his writing is, in 2019, Werner Herzog of I Believe the Common Denominator of the Universe is Not Harmony, but Chaos, Hostility, and Murder, Herzog, made a scripted movie about the proliferation of rental family services in modern Japan, titled Family Romance, LLC. It tells the story of a local actor who's hired to be the father of a 12-year-old girl who no longer remembers her real dad. Over time, the line between performance and reality blurs to the point that the protagonist suffers an existential crisis that leads him to question whether the corpses at funerals might actually be dead. and to wonder if his closest relatives are just random people who've been paid to perform for him since birth.
Hmm.
This film ends with the actor hiding from his own child, his sense of self forever destabilized as a result of the other roles he's played.
Yeah, very, very, very pessimistic, chaotic viewpoint yes. of this.
And this the worry I had with this movie mm-hmm. going in.
I think I know where you're heading.
Is yeah. exactly that, like, it was going to look at the rental family services like
a judgmental.
No, it was going to be like, how nice is this?
Oh, interesting.
Like, how nice is this?
You don't think the movie did do that in this movie?
I think it comes very close.
Yeah.
It straddles the line.
It does.
And I think ultimately it comes to a pretty decent finale, like final point, that the concept of the rental family service might be bad.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like rooted in deception.
Mm-hmm.
And because it seems like the end point of the movie is like to be much more open about it and just like we provide like friends, more or less.
Because I hesitate to go anywhere near this with a 10-foot pole again because of the cultural yeah. aspects of it, of mm-hmm. even thinking about making a judgment view yeah. of this service. Because I think for you and I, Jeff, like it would be easy for us to look at yeah. this service and say, well, isn't that sad and pathetic?
Well, that's what I like about this movie is it has a fairly nuanced view of this. This movie also has, like, is a very small part of the movie. This movie has a very nuanced view of sex work.
Yeah.
Which I like.
Yeah.
It treats it as just like a normal thing
yes.
in Japan.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not judgmental of the one prostitute character.
Yeah.
She's a full person and she just yep. like is present in multiple scenes, which I think is very cool.
Yes, absolutely.
But Hikari did a Reddit Ask Me Anything mm-hmm. 4 days ago, and I think it's worth just pulling up some of
please
her answers.
yeah
someone asked, what inspired you to do this movie?
Can you send me a link while yeah. as you read that? I just want to look through, but yeah, keep going.
What inspired you to do this movie? And Hikari said, the rental family concept was foreign to me and I wanted to know why this business exists, what kind of people in Japan use this service, and what kind of relationships do they create in a world that feels divided right now. I wanted to create a story that could potentially bring people together through this unique business.
Hmm.
Just kind of like explain the business and like
the people involved.
Yes.
More so.
Because this movie is like mostly a character study of the people who do the business. Yes. And the people who like need to use it.
Yeah. Because there's definitely a movie out there like the romance, Family Romance LLC, I imagine,
And someone asked, do you think, what's the most important thing for someone to understand going into the movie who doesn't understand what rental services are?
Mm-hmm.
Hikari responds, rental family businesses, as crazy as it sounds, is one way to connect people. It is perhaps a little bit similar to therapy, but it much more casual, and the surrogates are there to support the clients. Those services include just being there for them, whether it's to go shopping or to listen to their stories. I hope the audience walks away feeling that in the world right now, anything is possible if you need to find a connection. Friends, coworkers, anyone they surround themselves with can be their found family, and you should never feel alone again. You just have to make that first step.
Hmm. So I feel like it's safe to say, like, Hikari comes into this with her own preconceived judgments and yeah. views of this, similar to an Americanized lifestyle, again, because of her backstory, having been raised in Japan, but then moving here at a young age. And so I like that nuanced viewpoint. And like, I guess for me, it's like, what I loved about this movie never fully jumps into one pool or the other of this is bad, this is good, or it you're right. It does kind of straddle that line very closely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, like, cause you said like there's so many scenes. Well, let me go back to my original point I was trying to make. I don't know too much about the plot of Family Romance LLC.
Yeah,
I imagine
we haven't seen it. Neither of us.
Imagine
someone
similar. But my point is, erase that movie concept for a second. I see a movie out there that's like starring Brendan Fraser, who finds out his wife has been a paid actress for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And
it's called Total Recall. Stars right. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Came out in 19. 19-
right. But like,
God, Total Recall's so fucking good.
And then he's just reeling with this whole idea of like, my relationships are all fake. All my people I thought I was close is actually being paid for by my brother who thinks I'm lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who I thought I knew was actually just a paid actor. Well, there's also a movie like that. It's called The Truman Show.
Yeah.
But so all that to be said, like I imagine there being like a film concept in that sort of vein that starts off on that negative connotation of it that might have a way to twist it to be like, no. Like, here's why you think this might actually not be as bad. I like that this viewpoint is Brendan Fraser is a like a struggling actor, fish out of water, American who's been living in Japan. He's kind of running away from his life problems in the States, gets swept up into this business as one of the paid people. And then as he's sort of struggling to figure out the merits of this business, finds his own connections along the way, which solidified the purpose he's meant to fulfill in other people's lives. Like, I think that's great.
Yeah.
I love that. That's a great story. Yeah. That's just a great story to tell, especially that resonates with an American audience, but I'd be very interested in knowing like how Japanese audiences react to this movie.
I'd be curious.
Be very, very curious.
I found this another... Someone asked, why did you cast Brendan Fraser in Rental Family?
Oh, yeah.
And she says, when I saw Brendan in The Whale and in the Q&A immediately following, I felt in my gut that he was my Philip. I approached him immediately after that to be in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about what you expect.
About what you expect.
It's about what you expect the answer to be.
I definitely feel like
there... Kari, what's your favorite Godzilla movie? Response, Godzilla versus Megalon. That's good to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brendan's casting in this movie is perfect. He plays the role incredibly well. He's not doing too much. There's something in his performance I really want to talk about, but it's going to be when we get into the plot of the movie. Yeah. Because I think it could just be like Fraser as a human being, actor, doing the Brendan Fraser thing. Mm-hmm. Or if he's... doing what I think he's doing, it might actually be much more impressive, but I'd be very curious your thoughts. Anyway, anything else before we get into plot mode?
No, I do think we just kind of like summarize what the concept of Rental Family is and how
I wanted to talk about
where this movie comes from.
Cultural, historical concept, because I think that's something that like when the trailer ads for this, like trailers were coming out for this movie, like I wasn't necessarily begging that question of what's the Rental Family? Is this real? It's just kind of like the marketing of this movie is actually kind of genius because it kind of sweeps you in the whole like Brendan Fraser journey of the movie, and that's why you want to go see it. It's not like,
because there's always a certain degree of, no matter how well-meaning it can be, there's always like a certain question when the movie is set in a foreign country, mostly cast with foreign actors, and then there's like the one white guy in the middle of it,
right?
And like there, you always have the, you know, the squinty eye, like I think this movie, partially from being actually made by a Japanese filmmaker, but also just the way it approaches, Brendan Fraser really does fit into this movie as a surrogate character in a way that if you had a Japanese person at the center of the movie playing this role, fundamentally the movie's going to have to be very different.
Yeah.
Because you need this movie's about discovering this entire concept that you like are completely unaware of culturally.
What I was more so getting at was...
But I think that that's just interesting.
I agree. I 100% agree. The trailers of this movie, like, it would be very easy for the first trailer of this movie to be like, to open with the text that says... What's wrong?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
For 30 years, Japan has offered this service called the Rental Family. Kevin, or Philip Kloppenfinger, whatever his...
Philip Kloppenfinger, a recent survivor of the new... of the machine wars.
Vanderplague. Philip Vanderplague is an American living in Japan about to learn what this is for the first time. And then the trailer starts. That starts off your prospective audience's viewpoint of what this movie is going to be so drastically different. It doesn't do that. It just starts with, here's a guy living in Japan, gets involved in this thing, and he learns what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so glad this movie doesn't get you started on the basis of, this movie is going to be about us explaining the concept of Rental Family to you. Do you agree? Like, I feel like this movie didn't pull me to it because it's like, oh, well, I'm really curious about what Rental Family in Japan is like.
No, this movie is sold as like a feel-good Brendan Fraser movie.
Exactly. And And I think that was a very smart choice. Shall we get into plot?
Yeah, I think we just get into it.
Great. Well, we...
Explore amazing.
Okay.
Mary,
she doesn't have anyone else. I need to know that I have done one thing right with my life.
So anyway,
the video.
We're not going to talk about the whale.
The meme of him in that scene where he's like yelling and pointing, but they put the blunt in his hand. it's like he's passing the blunt.
Oh my god!
It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Brendan looks very healthy in this movie.
Yeah, no, he's great.
I just want to say that I'm pleased to see Brendan just looking very healthy and very fine. That's all. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. He looks great. He's back.
Yeah. But we start with Brendan Fraser. He is our titular POV character this entire movie.
He's a struggling actor.
Except for like a couple scenes where we bounce with the rental family folks, but that's not as important.
He's basically in every scene.
Yeah. He is a struggling actor who's late to his audition and he's trying to make it work in Japan. He's got an agent who's trying to get him some gigs and stuff. And then,
does the movie ever explain why he's in Japan?
So
I cannot remember. I missed about 4 minutes of the movie.
I don't think you missed that part, but there was like a quick little scene where he talks about like, I think his mom or dad, his dad wasn't much in his life and his mom, like I think passed away. Yeah. And since then he wanted to leave the country. I think it was like, he's kind of like leaving his grief and his like, behind.
They talk about that. I just wasn't sure if there was like a literal reason he was in Japan instead of anywhere else.
Fleeing like crimes.
I killed multiple people.
No, I mean like it's real. It never concretely solidifies it. It just kind of gives you an overwashing answer of like, this guy's been through some shit, like, and he's sort of escaping his grief.
He's a American expat living in Japan.
Yeah.
And he's hanging out.
And he's living alone. In like a little apartment.
And he lives in a little apartment. It's Lonely Guy Cinema.
Lonely Guy Cinema, baby.
At the start of this, because he's sitting in the room. And what does he do? The classic movie trick of spying on other people from across the alley.
Across the alley, yep.
Which is one of the things that 1.5 million movies have done.
Yes.
And somehow movies, for the most part, get away with not making it seem creepy. Because it is a kind of like...
It's all about the music, man.
Obviously, like Rear Window is a movie about this exact topic being creepy. Bad.
Yeah.
But
this movie does it in a very fulfilling kind of way.
It's like every night he just watches like the various people and their lives across the alleyway in their other apartments and thinks about them while sitting alone in his own space.
Yeah.
Struggling actor, he takes various gigs.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a tree in something nondescript.
Yeah.
He plays a pirate.
Yeah.
And then I missed the toothpaste scene.
Yeah.
Where he plays a sentient tub of toothpaste.
Yeah. Toothpaste guy. I mean, like, it makes it very clear this guy's getting like random commercials and small little gigs. Like, he's not making it break through. And so, like, I think we just kind of went through the first, like, 10-15 minutes of the movie already with that.
Yeah. We're just establishing that, like,
he's a lonely guy.
He's a lonely guy.
And he's, like, you know, not doing great, but he's, like, probably making it work. Like, I always think about it, like, what would this, when about a movie that's, like, a very singular character study in terms of its plot, it's, like, what would this guy's life be had the plots of the movie not had happened?
Yeah.
Would he have been happy or sad or worse off or better off or whatever? And
he would have continued existing.
He would continue existing and he probably would still just be like in the same spot that he had been, where he's just alone. And
well, the thing is, if the movie doesn't happen to him, he actually gets the job in Korea and moves to Korea.
Right. And then he's
about a week later.
That's fair.
He gets a role in a detective show in Korea.
And maybe his career would have taken off, or maybe it would have been the same old, where it's like you think it's going to be your big break, and it's not your big break.
The Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, where if Indy's not in the movie, the movie still ends exactly the same way.
Really?
If you raise Lost Ark, this is tragically a Big Bang Theory thing, but if Raiders of the Lost Ark occurs, Indiana Jones like never goes in pursuit of the Ark, the Nazis find the Ark, they dig up the Ark, they take it to the island, they open the Ark, and they all die.
Yeah.
Like, fundamentally, the same thing happens.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, that's interesting. It almost kind of dings the movie a little bit.
No, it's what's so good about it is you never think about this through the movie.
I guess so, yeah.
Indy is, like, fundamentally just, like, he's delaying the plot getting to its ending. It's what, yeah.
That's unique. But then I'm trying to think, like, he gets a call from his agent. Says, hey, I got you a gig. They need a sad American. Do you have a suit? Yes. Show up at this place. Yeah. Great.
And he thinks he's playing like a sad American in like a TV show or something.
He goes into this building, checks into the front desk. She says, okay, go right in through there. Please don't be loud. He walks in the door and there's a funeral happening. There's a man in a casket in the middle of this room.
Yeah.
People are giving eulogies about him. There's like
this
a portrait.
So
and he walks in. He's like,
he thinks he's just been hired to attend a funeral.
Yes. And so he very much like makes a scene in the sense that he like is obviously there late, shuffles into his seat and sits down. And the reveal where like when the one person's giving the eulogy and they start to cry and then the person in the casket wakes
rises
up
is so funny.
It's so funny because Fraser's expression of this is like, what in the world? The guy in the casket starts to cry. And then more people come around and like give more eulogies. And then we cut to the scene where they're all coming up and giving their like well wishes. They're putting a flower petal on him. And this guy is like awake and like smiling and everybody coming down. He's like, thank you so much. Thank you.
It's Brendan's reaction. It's the
so
one like, because this movie's PG-13, but it gets like the one fuck. And so Brendan's like just sitting there. He's watching this guy in a casket with the eulogy, and the guy just like shivering rises from the grave. And Brendan just goes, fuck.
It's so good.
It's so funny.
It's so funny. Everyone in the audience was laughing. We had a pretty good turnout.
People clapped at the end.
Well, listen, like we went. This is also the opening weekend for Wicked.
We went to a 2 p.m. on a Saturday. It was opening weekend of Wicked. The theater was the most packed I have ever seen it.
Yeah.
There's so many fucking people in the theater.
Yeah.
All there to see Wicked.
They're lines out the door.
Yeah. Lines out the door.
Yeah.
And we had a bunch of like older types in the rental family screening, which like big respect.
Big respect.
I saw because I'm a masochist sometimes.
Masochist.
I don't know why I say it like that. I went with two of our friends and former guests of the show, Mark Tilly and May Hyatt, to a screening of the right wing Reagan movie that they made.
Oh, Dennis Quaid.
And we went to the Dennis Quaid Reagan movie there, just to, like clown on it. It was a sold out screening. It was in the exact same theater that we were sitting in for Rental Family, Theater 12 at the AMC New City.
Yeah.
It was the most like surrounded by enemies I've ever felt in my life.
That's
the scene where Reagan was just like, you know, revenue enhancer is just another way to say tax increases. And a guy in the theater went, hell yeah.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
We were sitting in the exact same theater as that.
Yeah.
Once again, surrounded by older types, but I felt like they were friends this time instead of enemies.
Yeah. Friends instead of enemies.
But we had a good turnout. People were really into the movie. I heard, you know, some sniffles around me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice when a movie can bring people together.
Yeah. And so he, after the end of the funeral, one of the guys comes up to him, who we'll find out later is actually in charge of the rental company.
Yeah.
Takehiro Hira as Shinji. Shinji explains to him, it's like, hey, so, you know, we're going to dock your pay a little bit because you were a little late. And he's like, oh, was it very noticeable? It's like, yeah, it was very noticeable. And he said, yeah, so we'll whatever. And then he comes out and the guy who was in the casket is standing up saying goodbye to everybody who went. And he's telling Shinji, like, thank you. I've never felt more appreciated or alive. Like, you know, I really appreciate the service you guys are offering. And then Fraser like chases up to Shinji and is like, I am so like, what is this? What are you guys doing? Like, what are you guys offering? And he's like, we're rental family. And he gives him a business card and he's like, you want to come down to the office? I'll explain the whole thing to you. So then the next scene, he comes down to the Rental Family LLC office. And there's like three characters who are all there. Like I said, it's Takehiro as Shinji. There's Mari Yamamoto as Aiko.
There's a third guy. Can we just call him the third guy?
Akiro Emoto as that's different. That's the actor.
It's Kimura Bun as Koda.
Yes.
But
thank you.
He is simply
the third guy. Yes.
He is the classic movie character of, well, it can't just be these two people running the whole show, right?
Yeah.
We'll throw a third guy in there.
He is.
We'll cast someone.
He is essentially the third guy. So
he has no arc in this movie. He has no interior thoughts.
Yeah.
He is present in the movie to just to be a character.
It truly just is Takehiro and Mari, Shinji and Aiko, who are the main characters we're going to be with a lot at this rental family agency. So Fraser sits down with Takehiro, and then he starts explaining sort of the thing. So, like, we offer a rental service where we basically rent people out to folks in need of sort of an emotional replacement. So, like, if you need a friend who you've never had, or if you need, like, a cousin, or, like, a parent or a loved one, like, people who feel like they're missing that part in their life that they really need someone there for an important moment. And, you know, Fraser asks the obvious questions here. He says, like, don't these people just, like, have friends or, like, go to therapy? And Takehiro says it's like, well, mental health is a very different conversation in this country than it is in the U.S. So people aren't as open about their mental health problems. And if you are, it's sort of seen as a much bigger ding against your character than it would in other places around the world. And Fraser just kind of like, okay, I still don't quite understand it, but sure. And he said, so, you know, you would be great for this service. He's like, why? It's like, because you'd be like the token white guy.
Yeah. That,
and like, surprisingly, there is a big demand for white people, like white guys for rental family services in Japan, strangely enough. So then he says, if you want, like, I can sign you up and we can get you started and you could see how you feel about it, but you got to be committed. Yeah. He says, like, okay, I guess I'll give it a shot. Like, great. Your first role is you're getting married.
Yes.
Which.
Yeah. And like the logic here is this young girl is lesbian. And
we don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet, but I'm just going to explain it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That she wants to get married to her girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But her parents want a traditional wedding.
Yes.
And so they hire Brendan to essentially be the husband of a traditional wedding so they can have the traditional wedding. And then after the wedding, he kind of leaves the scene.
So because the movie treats it as the reveal that she's a lesbian, the beginning of this process feels much more like, hey, this woman wants to get out away from her family, but in Japan, like, the only way you can really do that, separating yourself from your parental unit, is getting married.
Yeah.
And she, you know, can't necessarily like get married for X amount of reasons, and we're providing her the service to sort of like give her the opportunity to leave home and go on her own journey and adventure. They do a really good job of explaining like the importance to their clients, which I think is important. It doesn't, something that we've already talked a little bit about is I really like how this movie doesn't satirize the clients as just sad, pathetic people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I think that's a very easy thing to do. It almost kind of does that with the funeral guy.
It almost kind of does it with the video game guy.
But even then,
but it doesn't. It doesn't.
No, it doesn't, because like there's even a bit with the video game guy. Really, like he starts to clean up his room. He trims his beard, and it's like, and Brendan Fraser comments like, "Hey, dude, you're looking great." Like, and I'm like, my God, like
I love the video game guy.
Well, it's like,
to be clear,
how many people, like, there's people we probably know who are like, you know, they're in sort of that similar stuck place, and honestly, like just having a good friend who encourages you and gives you confidence is that tiny boost you needed to like clean up your room. Yeah. Trim your beard, have good hygiene, maybe go outside, maybe try and get a job, meet someone at a bar. Yeah. Like, it really does sometimes just take that one little inch.
You just need a friend.
Yeah. And so, like, yes, it does kind of start off with, like, oh, haha, this guy's paying for someone to come over to his house to play video games.
Yeah.
And then it becomes more than that. And I like that. I really like that. Same with, like, you know, the funeral guy. Like, it starts off pretty satirizing of, like, how sad is it that this guy needed to, like, put on a fake funeral to feel important, right?
But it's like, no, he got something genuine out of that.
He did. Everybody gets something genuine.
I think
genuine.
That the movie comes to a nice little conclusion of that the ones that are rooted in deception ultimately like collapse and are bad.
Yes.
But the ones that are like genuine like collaborations between the rental family and the client like are fruitful and beneficial because they provide like just a friend, a service.
Like it's like half and half the services you see being conducted in this movie are, they start off on the basis of everybody involved knows what's happening here. Right. Like, yeah. I feel like everybody's very aware. It's like, you're a paid person here to fulfill this thing. There's no misguidings or misgivings on what you're here to do, but you're here to do it and it pays off. And I get what I want. You get what you want. And it's great. It is a little bit kind of like sex work, prostitution. Yeah. It's emotional, you know?
Yeah.
But in a way that everybody comes off, you know, feeling better about it. So anyway, yes. So Fraser, they do their first meeting with the bride to be, who's this younger Japanese woman. Fraser, and then
he almost bails out.
Well, so in the scene he says, like, you know, don't you feel like I'm a little, because he asks a lot of questions. He's like, first off, like, don't you feel like I'm a little old for you? And she says, like, if they see me marrying like an older man, it'll feel like I'm marrying somebody who's more responsible. It's like, okay, how do your parents feel about this? And they're like, my parents just want me to have like a traditional wedding.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't really understand the other reasons.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. So he's like, he's very asking a lot of questions. Then we get the wedding. And as the bride's getting ready and we have the rental family employees there, sort of, they're like they're
wedding planners.
They're wedding planners. And they go into Brendan's room and Brendan's not there. He's gone. And they're like,
he's gone to the toilet.
It's like, where is he? They search around all over the place. And then Mari runs into the man's bathroom and finds him like locked in a stall.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do this. It feels so wrong. It feels weird. And she talks about it by saying, like, first, like, if you don't fall through on this, like pull lock in, like, you're going to be ruining her life.
Yes.
And so he finally locks in. They perform the wedding ceremony, and Fraser, because my thinking is Fraser is an actor. He's being hired to be an actor for other people. But this is the first impotent moment where I felt like he's not really acting. Like, Philip, the character in the movie, I don't feel like is actually like acting that much a little bit. He's just kind of being a guy there to do the thing. And then we feel more and more and more like the performance mixed with the genuineness that he is able to insert into it. Am I reading way too much into this movie?
No.
Like, okay. No. good. Just make it, just check it in. So maybe we should delay more.
No, I think the movie, like, ultimately, he does the full wedding and like genuinely helps this woman.
Yeah. And then we go to their hotel room.
Yeah.
Well, and he hugs the bride and groom and they're like very excited. But then we cut to, they're in the hotel room and he's sitting there with the bride and he says, well, that was fun. It was a beautiful ceremony. And then there's a knock at the door. A young Japanese woman comes in and they embrace and they kiss. And Fraser at this point, like, he now understands the full purpose of what he was there to do. You feel it with Fraser's performance.
You can feel he feels fulfilled.
He feels fulfilled
by a job he did for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and he walks out and he, like,
because as an actor, you spend most of your life pretending to be other people, but that's it. Like, but like the level he's at,
and he pretended to be somebody for somebody, but not in the service of just like entertaining them, but like actually helping them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like actor therapy. It's you know, and so that happens, and then he decides, like, he wants in on the rental family business. He says, great, well, I have a longer project here for you. You're going to be a dad. He's like, what? And Mari is immediately like, is he ready for that? Like, that's a really big commitment. And he's like, no, yeah. So this single parent mom with her 9-year-old, 10-year-old?
She's young.
She's young, but she's not like a toddler. Like, she's
a 10-ish.
She's 10-ish, like grade school, like smart girl. And he says they're trying to get into a very prestigious private school, but they need two parents.
Yes,
to
they
be
need
there
both parents
at the interview. Fraser asks the obvious questions, like, well, they're not going to let in like a child of a single parent household. And they're like, again, social standards, it will look a lot better and give her a much bigger chance.
Yeah, much better chance to get into the school.
If two parents are there at the interview. Yeah. So you need to go there and need to pretend to be her dad.
Yes. And here's where the problem becomes.
Mm-hmm.
That the way that the mom of the daughter has constructed this is they're not going to tell the girl about the deception.
Yeah.
He is going to play her father for her.
Yes.
and it causes problems.
Yes.
Because her father left her, essentially. Yes. And so when Brendan shows up, he tries to be, he does his best, like, people are amazing. he does his best Sadie Sink child.
Yeah. Mia is the character name of the little girl, played by Shannon Mahina Gorman.
She's quite good.
She like appears like she's like mixed, I think. So like they cast like a mixed, like Japanese, Caucasian little girl.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting. It's like they had to hire a token white guy because it's like if it was a Japanese man who showed up and said, I'm your father, he'd be like, well, wait a minute. Something doesn't make sense here. So they hire Brendan Fraser and he is rehearsing himself like, hi, Mia, I'm your father. Mia, it's me, your father. Like he's doing the Fraser whale thing a little bit. I'm just like, hi, Mia, it's me, Kevin. I'm your father.
Yeah.
Give me some credit. I'm doing pretty good on that.
No, that's pretty good. You're doing pretty good, Brendan.
And he shows up and he meets the mom first. Like, here, give her this. It's a new backpack. She wanted this backpack, so you can give it to her and it'll be great. And then he shows up. He's like, and the mom says, Mia, like, this is Kevin. He's your father. He's like, hi, Mia, I got you this backpack. And she grabs a backpack and she throws it at him and says, like, you think you could just buy me with this backpack? Yeah. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And then she just...
She runs away.
Stomps off and runs away.
Chases after her and promises he won't leave again and that he's here for her to help her.
Makes a full fucking promise that he is never going to leave.
Makes a pinky promise at one point.
And
which is,
we could,
as we know, binding.
We could feel it in the audience that everybody in the audience of the theater was like, oh, no.
Yeah, you can kind of... He gets too in too deep.
Right away.
Yeah, right away.
Because it's the fact that he chases after her. He's a hired actor. Yeah. He has no relation to this little girl whatsoever. But it's the fact that she runs off and he's like, well, if I'm playing the role of her father, I'm going to run after her.
Yeah.
So he runs after her and he's like, I don't know this man. And this guy's like, well, she's not wrong.
Yeah.
And so, but he catches up and they make that promise. I'm never going to leave you ever again.
Yeah.
And that is now a major plot point that we're going to be revisiting.
And
it's
one of the two threads we're going to be sticking with for the rest of the movie.
Yep.
Because we quickly jump to the other one.
We kind of
for like about 20 minutes, I'd say, like jump between his three main jobs.
Yep.
And then like various other ones get like random.
Three?
I'd say the video game guy gets like a decent chunk in the middle.
I would say like the video game guy is like a part of the montage aspect because he's doing.
But he keeps resurfacing.
Like, I love the bit with the video game guy. I love that they revisit him because there's a montage of this movie where he's back and forth between little girl, old man.
Yes.
Let's talk about the old man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's hired for a like legendary Japanese actor who's played by Akira Emoto, who is actually a legendary Japanese actor.
Yeah.
And basically the idea is this guy he's 80 years old. He has dementia. He is afraid he's going to lose all of his memories soon. And he is terrified of that and wants to like, he's afraid that people are forgetting about him too, as he's forgetting about himself.
Yeah.
And so he wants to share his stories.
Fucking Jeff coded.
He wants to share his stories and his career with someone. But like no real press want to talk to him.
Right.
And so Brendan pretends to be a film reporter.
He's hired
reporter.
By the daughter.
He's hired by the guy's daughter.
Yeah.
So he comes in, pretends to be a film reporter to interview and like essentially do a series about this guy's life.
Yeah.
And the character within the movie is named Kikuo.
Yeah.
So Brendan shows up and he's told, you know, talk to this guy about anything. Just don't ask him about like Ghost of Hiroshima.
Yeah.
which I do like.
I really like that. He talks to him. They quickly form a good relationship.
Yeah, like the guy at first is like, haven't heard of your magazine.
Yeah.
And then they get to talking. He's like, I've seen all your movies. I read your books. And they talk about his career.
Yeah.
And the guy develops a connection to him and starts, you know, showing him a little more around his house and his property.
Yeah.
And eventually like kind of wants to leave the house with
Brendan. He eventually like confides in him and says like, cause when does he mention that he wants to go to like his old village?
That's a decent bit later. They go to the restaurant first.
They do go to the restaurant first. I think he mentions it at the restaurant.
Yeah. But basically now that we've like introduced these two main threads, we get like, there's like, I'd say a 5 minute montage itself, but almost like a 20 minute montage-y section of the movie.
Yeah.
where it's just like we're jumping between these three storylines. Nothing plot heavy is happening.
Yeah.
But it's just like establishing the old man and him, our interview, are talking a lot.
Yeah.
He goes to the daughter's, like, take your dad to work day.
Yeah. Right.
And she's, you know, hesitant to work with him.
Yeah. That scene was really good.
But she does notice there's another little boy in the class who doesn't have a dad.
Yeah.
And so she brings him over and is like, can you be his dad too?
Yeah.
It was very sweet.
Very sweet.
And they may... Okay, here's my main problem.
Sharktopus.
Can I say my main problem with this movie?
What's their main problem?
Okay.
They say they're going to make a sharktopus.
You know what they make? They make a coat hanger with like four jellyfish hanging from it.
It's not a sharktopus.
Where the fuck is the sharktopus?
Apparently the props department did not pull through that day.
Up. If I was in there, I would have dropped this guy.
Props department for rental family?
Yeah.
You fucked up.
You know what? What if like the next scene is she like comes back crying and she's like, I got a zero. He's like, why? And she's like, we said we made a sharktopus and they said it's not a sharktopus. This is a coat hanger with jellyfish on it.
You're not going to
get better, kid. You were not getting into the school.
You're not going to get that school.
You will not survive the winter.
And like Fraser at this point, he's performing it in this way of like Philip / Kevin.
He's genuinely starting to become attached to these people.
Because he hangs up the little hanger with the jellyfish in his apartment.
Yes.
And he like looks at it very fondly.
He is starting to feel like a genuine father to this girl.
Yep.
In the same way he's starting to feel like a genuine friend to Kikuo.
We missed a quick little bit of dialogue that's very easy to miss. But when he's taking the job as this little girl's father, he makes a comment. It's like, I don't even know how to be a dad. My dad left me when I was very young. So like it, again... And the theme of this movie is like when Fraser plays the role as a rented serviceman, it often seems to be the case that the people he's renting himself for, he's taking equal benefit amount. The old man is his surrogate father that he's renting out. The daughter is his rented daughter in that way. So it takes that kind of role of like Fraser's filling in these roles in other people's lives, but they're filling in the role of his life that he desperately needed. It's very good.
It's very nice.
Very good. Hikari, I see.
No, it's good.
Yeah. I can't even say that like very nice job because that is the intention of the fucking...
That is the movie.
That is the movie.
If that doesn't work, then the movie is a complete failure.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
And then there's the third thing. We keep mentioning video game guy, but like I just want to quickly like shout him out. Like his storyline is
he just wants
someone to come play video games with him.
Yep.
N64, I think, is what he has.
Yep.
And Brendan just comes by like three or four times and they play video games together. And slowly but surely, the guy like starts cleaning up his apartment, shaving his beard, taking care of his hygiene a little more. And then the last time we see him, he's actually left his apartment to go to a show with Brendan.
Yeah.
Admittedly, a strip show, but it's still a show.
But it's still a show.
He still left his house.
Yeah. Love that beat. Yeah. It's a nice little beat. It's a nice beat.
There's a few like other random like clients intermingled who get like one scene.
Yeah.
Like there's the old lady who does the dance with
God, I barely remember any of the other little beats.
Like, they're
so quick and they're so like
Aiko does the dance with the old lady and then there's like established that their one of their biggest like sources of revenue is apology services.
Yeah, so
which is essentially
let's talk about this.
Which is essentially like
mainly performed by Mari.
I would say this is like basically the midpoint. Aiko like she basically will go to women pretending to be their husband's mistress and apologize for betraying them, taking the blame off of the husband, putting it onto this random woman who then gets to leave. And during one of these apology services, Aiko gets slapped.
There's a bruise on her face.
Yeah. And Brennan like confronts her about this. She's like, it's part of the job.
Yeah. Very morally gray area.
Yes.
It's like,
well, those are the ones where like it's you're really like fundamentally not like really helping anyone. You're just helping a guy get away with a crime more or less.
Yeah, pretty much. But and she says that's a big part of our business.
Yeah, it's like one of the main parts of our business.
Yeah, is apology services. So it's like again, like it's another piece of importance to this movie is that it doesn't paint the rental family concept as all good or all bad. It weaves that line very neatly. And this is the point where we're seeing the movie like, oh, this is like not a very healthy thing though. And like that emotional replacement, you're not emotionally replacing anything. You're just aiding and abetting a dude's malicious deeds. So, and you know, and that's where like Fraser and Aiko, and they ask a great, great question in this movie that I want to ask all of my friends. So, because as they're talking about this, they're at like a ramen bar or something, and he asks her about the bruise, and they talk about that. And then they talk about, you know, our service offers like that emotional replacement that we've all been needing in our lives, blah, blah, blah. If you had to rent somebody from our service, what role would you rent?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the
chance. Yes, it's interesting. It's
and
a fun idea.
Fraser says, probably my mom.
Yeah.
Because my dad left when I was young, and then she died not too long ago. And ever since then, there's been like moments I've felt like I could really have used her guidance on things. And just that she's such like a non-judgmental role figure in my life that, you know, feeling like she'd be like, I'm over exacerbating. He doesn't say all these lines of dialogue. It's really, but it's literally just the fact of like that longing for that deep connection you felt like you had. He asks her the question. She doesn't give him an answer. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, no, he doesn't give her an answer. She doesn't give him an answer.
If you had to rent somebody, Jeff, who would you rent?
I actually just don't think I would rent someone. I feel pretty content.
I know. I was kind of thinking that too.
I feel pretty content.
But let's not be boring white men here. I don't know. I think probably, I don't.
Realistically, I'd probably just be like, someone come play Halo with me. I don't know.
Somebody to come play board games or D&D.
I feel like doing a local LAN party for Halo Combat Evolved. You want to? I generally don't think I have like a service. I come like put my Christmas lights up for me. At that point, I'm just hiring a contractor.
Yeah, I know.
I would hire someone to come over and help me clean my house, and then I would go in the basement and they would clean the house.
I just think it's such an interesting question. If you could rent somebody to fulfill an absent role in your life, who would you rent? And I really like that question because it makes you have to reflect on what role you think has been missing from your life. But how do you know you've been missing a role for your life? You don't know because it's your reality. To know that you've been missing a role means you've had to have had that role in your life once that then went away.
Yeah.
But at that point, you're just replacing either a passed away loved one or somebody who left you. And so in both regards, your initial inclination to think, I don't need replacing that person because either I had them for the time I had them and they passed away, or they didn't think I was worth their time enough to stick around. So they skipped, and I don't feel like I need that replacement because it's part of my character to make it work without them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I never needed a dad because my dad left me and I made it work without having a dad. Yeah. So why do you think I need a dad in my life?
Mm-hmm.
That's a real like point of view. A lot of people have about like, you know, step parents and things like that. It's like, no, it's just been me and my mom, or it's been me and my dad, or it's been me and my siblings. And it's like, we don't need to have that emotional replacement because
we'll
made
talk
it work
about
without
it in next week's episode on Death to Smoochie. But if your stepdad is being mean, he's not mean. He's just adjusting.
Did you watch it this morning?
I did watch Death to Smoochie this morning.
Yeah. No, I love this movie. I love the questions this movie poses. Then we.
We go back to essentially the resolutions of the two plots.
Yes. I want to talk about, there's a little girl scene in the museum where there's like light shows.
Yeah, they walk around
like
a bunch of light shows. And it's nice.
And it's very nice. I don't even think much happens here. Oh, that's when he gets the call that he has a job in.
Yeah, he's offered a job in a detective show in Korea, but he would have to leave like within the week.
And he turns it down.
He turns it down.
He says, I can't do it. I mean, because
he's too attached to this girl now.
Yeah. They exchange phone numbers.
They do.
And she gives him like a personal ringtone and says, I'm going to call you. Or
it's like, meow, meow, meow.
It's a cat
meow,
thing.
Meow. Your cat just looked at me when I did that.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow. Yeah.
To that very point, he's fully. Do you ever think when you're that scene, when he like exchanges the numbers, he turns on the Korean role, do you ever have the viewpoint of like, oh, this is bad what he's doing? Like he's getting too attached or?
Yes. Okay. Very much so.
Yeah.
I have that
was my first view.
Yeah.
Too.
I have that thought like in the movie that he's getting too attached.
Yeah.
And I do think within the context of like how they're like treating this girl, I do think he is too attached.
Yeah.
I do think it's a little weird.
Yeah.
I think the movie like rescues it from being too weird at the end, but you do have the thought of like, yeah, this is going to turn out bad because the other shoe is going to have to drop at some point.
On both fronts. Because on one front, you're not her father.
Yeah.
You're a stranger who begs the question that the mom is totally fine with this paid actor to take her daughter out on so many excursions by themselves. Yeah. which I guess like you could make the case of all the rental family service, they do background checks, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But like,
but still,
man, yeah, like
it's weird. I wouldn't trust my kid.
I wouldn't trust.
Yeah, I don't
like,
have a kid, but
it's like if I had a kid, I definitely would not trust them to go around with this, like a paid actor pretending to be their father. Like that's it yeah. gets a little dicey in the movie a little bit. The movie, you're right though. The movie does save it from going full on creepy.
Yeah. Because like the resolution ultimately comes down to they go to the interview process for this like fancy school they want her to get into. Her mother wants her to get into.
And he gets told after the interview, you have to tell her you're leaving.
Yes.
Because you're getting too attached.
Yes. Because the mom's getting concerned about how attached she is.
She finds out that they exchange
but
numbers.
He plays a very good role in the interview.
Yeah. He
genuinely has an interest in her future success.
Yeah. And he goes about it in a way of like how an actual like concerned, loving father yes. would react. Because he has a script for yes. the interview. And there's a scene where they're like going over the script and they say, so when they ask us the question, what expectations do you have of us for your daughter? We're supposed to say nothing, no expectations. Yeah. And Fraser's like, well, hold on yeah. a minute. Like, do we really not have any expectations? Mm. Like, I feel like this girl's going to go to a lot of big places. Is it right that we should feel like the school gets to decide her yeah. future from this young of an age? And at this point, the mom's like, pardon me?
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to say here? Like, are you trying to talk about my parenting? And he's mm-hmm. like, well, no, but I just think, and it does kind of, it gets to like that little sketchy viewpoint. Fraser's not right or wrong in this context. Like, he's right on the words he's saying, but he's wrong in like the authority that for a split second he feels like he has.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like it. I like it a lot. I like it a yeah. lot.
But he tells her that he has to leave. He tells her that he has to go back to America.
After the interview.
After the interview.
Because in the interview, like they...
he tells her after the interview that he has to leave.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to talk about the interview real quick. That like they go to the interview and they sit down and they're asking these questions and Fraser talks
yeah,
about the daughter.
Yeah,
and he's like, well, like there was that one.
He tells
her
that she is a good that yeah. she's a good kid.
Yeah, like she was in class and there was this little boy and she invited him over because he didn't have a parent there. Like he just can you feel that genuine connection?
Yeah.
But yeah, then after the interview, he says like, hey Mia, I have to go back to America.
Yeah.
She's like, for how long?
At least a year.
At least a year, maybe more.
Yeah.
She says, but you promise you never leave. It's like, I know, but I'm so proud of you and I have high hopes for you.
Mm-hmm.
And something great is like, she's not like angry,
yeah.
which is how you're expecting her to interact in yeah. this moment. This is the scene that made me cry.
Yes, this is the scene that made you cry.
And like it's basically like she gives him, it's like, will I see you again? And he just like gives her a hug and says, I'm so proud of you. And I think you're going to do amazing
People
things.
Are amazing.
People are amazing. I'm just imagining her as Sadie Sink now. but then like Mia, like she does something great. She just like hugs him and says like, I'll miss you, Dad. And she has like a single tear runs down and Fraser never cries in this moment, but you feel like in his performance, he's like, this is really hard for him to do. This mm-hmm. is really hard. And then they go their separate ways and he watches her walk away with the mom.
Yeah.
I was a fucking wreck watching this scene. I mean, because Fraser's performance, like his face when she's yeah. walking away, like again, he's not crying. But you just see Fraser has a good like almost cry look yeah. face.
He's got great like teary eyed.
Because like
he has a very lovable face.
Well, we've made jokes in Fraser's movie past, like on Bedazzled when he's like the oversensitive guy and he's always yeah. crying. And we talked about in movies past like how he's such a good crier.
Yeah,
and in his like 90s and early 2000s work. 2020s Brendan Fraser, he's so good at like looking like he's about to cry.
Because he has a kind of sad face now.
Yeah,
like his face just looks a little sad,
and it's kind of like. Weathered
Even
by
when
trauma.
He's smiling, he just looks a little sad.
Yeah. And so he this is like the ultimate lemon squeeze of the Fraserness of it all is this moment right here. He's showing me the blunt bit. Okay. Oh man. Just had to take me out of it. Good. Yeah, all right. No, that's good. So but, then yeah, we get the resolution to the old man bit.
The old man wants to
they go to the restaurant. He tells him in the restaurant,
I want to go to my childhood home.
Yeah.
And Brent's like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, you're an old man with dementia.
Yeah, the old man kind of wanders out of the restaurant, Kikuo, and...
Almost walks into traffic.
Brendan, like, gets him home.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, so are we going to go to my childhood home? It's on, like, essentially the other end of Japan.
Yeah.
Like, they're in Tokyo, and
they have to take a train.
They have to take a train. Like, it's, like, a long hike.
Full adventure.
You have to take a train to a bus, and then you have to ride it on the back of a pickup truck.
Like the whole game
Brendan
Avengers
is like,
Endgame.
It's the biggest Brendan has ever looked in his life is when he's sitting in the little pickup truck.
Yeah, very good.
He looks massive, like a giant.
Mm-hmm. I love how like the architecture in Japan is a lot of the doorways are small.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Yeah. What I like about this sequence like really shows off Japan as like a place, and it made me want to go there.
I
like that it's not hyper-stylized Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Like this doesn't make it look like an idyllic place by any means. Mm-hmm. This movie just presents it as it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it looks like a fun place I'd like to visit.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it.
I'd like to see it.
I would like to see it.
Yeah.
But Brendan,
did they tell him he can't see the old man anymore too? I thought it was just the daughter.
The daughter essentially like kiboshes the idea of going anywhere.
And he's like pretty much bedridden for the most part.
Yeah.
And they made it clear it's like he needs to like rest now and basically die.
Yes.
They're like, and we don't want him going
Brendan
anywhere.
Brendan feels guilt.
Yeah.
And decides, I am going to give this guy what he wants. And so he does the jailbreak. He like sneaks in.
This is the Jeff Sweeney scene.
This is like a honest to God kidnapping.
Yeah. Like,
the movie, he gets out of it by the end, but it is actually a kidnapping, even if the guy wants to go along.
Yeah, he sneaks into his home.
Yeah, he sneaks into the home, gets the guy in a disguise from his movie. He has like cool
songs. We're busting out.
Yeah, we're busting out. The guy's really into it. It's like a fun sequence.
No, I will wear my own disguise.
Yes.
He wears like a fedora hat with sunglasses. Yeah. Everybody in the audience
looks like a movie star.
Moment.
But they escape the house and they take the train and they go all the way to his childhood home.
They have to hike through a jungle.
Yeah. And like the home is like overgrown at this point. It's very like Studio Ghibli place.
Yeah.
Like this looks like the type of like little village in the woods that you go to in like a Ghibli movie.
Yeah.
And
then he wanders off because they sleep in like one of the overgrown homes. Yeah. Fraser wakes up and he's not there.
The guy's not there. And he's like, oh my God. He finds the guy. He has wandered up a hill in the woods.
To this like magnificent tree.
To this magnificent tree. And then the guy just like starts digging a hole in the ground in a random spot. Eventually leading to like a little tin can container. He opens it up and there's a bunch of old photos in there.
Of him and his wife.
Of him and his first girlfriend.
Oh, first girlfriend.
Who said he planned to marry because he left for a year.
To go to Tokyo.
To go to Tokyo. And then by the time he could come back, she had died.
Okay.
And so he came back and he took the photos of her and he buried them here.
Yeah.
And he's saying, I'm losing my memory. I'm going to die soon. I want to like see her one last time before I lose my memory of her.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so beautiful. It is such like a genuinely like,
I didn't cry in this scene, but I felt it.
No, this whole sequence is really effective for me. And it's this like, you know, idea of just memory and loss all kind of intermingled with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea like at the end of your life, like what are the memories you want to hold on to at that point?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of only have, if you only have so much time left, there's only so many memories you're going to be able to like preserve.
Yeah.
And I find that really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that like, I just wanted to see her again.
Yeah.
It's
a beautiful moment.
Yeah, and he cries and Brendan is there for him and he consoles him. Mm-hmm. And then the worst thing happens, like collapses. You know, Brendan gets a phone call from the company.
Yeah.
And they're like,
you
kidnapped a client. which I will, to be clear, he did essentially kidnap him.
Like, he did essentially kidnap him.
But the guy did want to go. And then the guy collapses. Brendan calls an ambulance. Kikuo is fine.
Right. Yeah.
He's stable. But Brendan gets arrested by the Tokyo police.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically are like, you have 48 hours to prove your innocence or you are going to be sent to prosecution.
Which in Japan means deportation.
Yes.
Because I'm pretty sure I read something recently that Japan is, they're deporting any like non-citizens who commit crimes or something like that.
Which would, I guess, make sense.
Yeah.
I guess that, like, legally.
Yeah.
I guess that's what you would do.
Yeah. And so, like, they're like, we have 48 hours to, like, get him out or else he's, like, gone forever. And the funniest bit happens. Oh! We need to talk about Shinji. because we're about to get to a scene that we have to lay the groundwork for the context for. So there's a scene earlier where when Shinji comes home, we get a little bit of Shinji backstory. Shinji comes home and we see that he has a son and a wife. Wife is cooking dinner when he gets home. And the son, he's doing homework and he sits down. He's like, how did the soccer game go? And he's like, oh, it didn't go too well. He's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about that. And then they sit down and they eat a meal. Mm-hmm. And I'm even asking the question of this scene. This is almost too idyllic.
Yeah.
Were you ever thinking that? Or was it too, like, you weren't even thinking about it? Like, maybe I'm thinking about it now, but mm-hmm. like, I feel like when I watched the movie and I saw it's like, you come home and there's a wife yeah. cooking dinner and you got the son doing homework.
Like, you do wonder, like, what this scene is ultimately getting to.
Yeah.
It's less like me thinking it's idyllic. It's like, okay, what's the purpose of this scene?
And then we get the purpose.
The purpose is he has essentially hired these people to be like his family when he comes home because he's lonely and doesn't have anyone.
Yes.
But he's like, and he's such a perfectionist. But
yeah, the way the scene plays out.
He's like, so nope, we're going to reset from the top. And he mm-hmm. walks back out and he comes back in and the kid like messes up the line again. And he's just like, just leave. Just go, both of you. And then he's sitting there alone in his house. Because he doesn't have anyone. The only thing he has is this like, he doesn't have any real connection. He yeah. only has this artificial connection.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between him and Brendan is Brendan is making these artificial connections real.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's keeping them artificial.
Oh, yeah.
But,
Good. Oh, my God. He on X Games mode.
It was perfect.
All right. Sorry. So good. So then, the third guy and, Mari, Aiko, they pretend to be lawyers.
Yes.
And they show up to Kiko's
house.
This
is, I think, the best laugh of the movie.
It is the best laugh of the movie.
They show up as lawyers because they're going to, like, essentially try and convince Kikuo to, they're going to tell him, like, hey, so they're going to deport Brendan unless you vouch for him.
Yeah.
And they show up, and then at the same time,
there's an intercom comes over. Somebody else is at the house.
Yeah, cops show up.
And it's like, hey, this is Detective so-and-so from the Tokyo Police Department. Yeah. I need to speak about, you know, Mr. Phillips' case.
Yes.
And they're like freaking out.
They're like, fuck, we're going to get arrested.
We're going to get arrested.
The cop walks in. It's Shinji in disguise. He had the exact same idea.
Yeah. Yes. And they're just looking at each other. Yeah. And like, the audience is laughing hysterically at this moment. This was a really, really funny bit in the movie. Great setup, punchline, delivery, all good. So Fraser gets released. They're successful. He gets released from prison. He's like, thank you for busting me out. And I think he gets busted out. And shortly after is when Kikuo dies. We're in the third act now of the movie, I'm pretty sure. Am I missing anything in the middle here?
No. We're firmly in the third act.
Yeah. Because I think the major first thing that happens is...
I would say we've actually been in the third act.
Yeah, that's fair. But, like, Kikuo dies.
Yes.
For real.
We're in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And so Kikuo dies. He goes to the funeral. And it's a great scene because, like, we're revisiting the first funeral Fraser ever attended as a token white guy.
Yeah.
He is now the authentic token white guy at a client's funeral.
Yes. It's a nice, like, full circle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really nice full circle.
And he gets to, like, see, you know, Kikuo, and he has the photos.
Instead of putting a flower petal down.
Yeah, he puts the photos in Kikuo's pocket and says, I will see you again, my friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something worthy of note is that Kikuo keeps taking him to this, like, a Buddhist shrine, essentially.
Yep.
And he keeps being like, what's on the... And Kikuo like essentially opens like a little curtain and prays to something on the other side.
We don't see it yet.
And then close it. And Brendan's like, what's on the other side? And Kikuo would just laugh.
He says, you're welcome to take a look. And early on, he said, you know, there's a Buddhist expression where like God is within everything.
Yes.
Including ourselves. Yeah. We'll get to that.
I think like the fundamental point the movie is getting at, it's not a religious point.
Right, right, right.
It's kind of just like it's
that loving connection.
It's lower G God.
Yeah. You're right.
God is a concept rather than as a thing.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's that idea of like the capabilities of love and connection is something innately capable of every human being. There isn't a single person who's incapable of love and forming a connection. Yeah. It's a beautiful thesis of the movie that we'll get to. And so then after the funeral, Kikuo, then he goes to see the little girl, Mia. This is like... I need to do. I have the one thing right in my life. I still love The Whale. It's a beautiful movie. And
remember when he flies away at the end?
Floats.
He goes and he fights General Zod.
Stop it. stop it. And so he goes and finds Mia, who's walking to school. This scene has all the landmarks of being a creepy scene, mm-hmm. but it thankfully is smart and doesn't go full in creepy mode. Because he's like, he finds the little girl walking to school or from school or whatever. Yeah. And they talk. Oh, and we miss the part that Mia's at home with the friend from school that she invited to the table. And they're playing around the living room and they look on the TV and they see Brendan Fraser's face as a pirate for a show or something.
Look, I won't say they locked in.
They locked in on the fake
because,
movie
like,
within the movie.
They had to make a fake little thing for him to be in.
Yeah.
And I just like, they were just like, he's playing a pirate and he speaks Spanish.
Yeah. It's really good. It's really, really good. I love it. I love it so much.
It's just like this one clip of him looking grungy as hell.
Yeah.
But I do like that the kid locks in that's him. He's wearing a bunch of makeup. It could conceivably just be a guy who kind of looks like him.
But no, she locks in and she asks her mom, she's like, hey, so.
Is dad an actor?
Is dad my real father? And then she is, and then it gets. We don't ever find the other end of that conversation. We do see the daughter and the mom reconciling because the mom says, I'm sorry that I lied to you about your father. I just wanted to help you. And they hug and embrace. So we do get reconciliation between the mom and the daughter for that deception. Cut back to Fraser finding Mia. So Mia's like, hey, I'm not supposed to talk to strangers. And he's like, oh, well, you're right. I can leave if I want or if you want me to. She said, so like, what does she say? She says, is my mom paying you to be here too? And he's like, nope, it's just me. She's like, so what's your real name? It's like, my real name is Philip. And, hi, hello.
Cat just went crazy.
Just went crazy. Oh, you're tangled up in there. There you go. And so it's okay. Yeah, you're okay. So then Fraser says my real name is Philip. She says, hi, Philip, I'm Mia. And then they walk to school together.
It's very sweet.
It's a very sweet moment.
Like, she is going to continue to be a part of her life under the knowledge that she's not really his dad.
Yeah. Then the final image and scene of the movie is Fraser goes back to that Buddhist shrine. Well, there's one quick little scene in the middle where they're at the office. Fraser's still working at Rental Family. And it's well known that they've acknowledged each other as companions now.
Yeah.
Like they're friends. They're like one unit now. And Shinji answers the phone. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry. We don't do apology services anymore.
Yeah.
Because to reconcile that part of
the Rental Family has become a more ethical agency.
Yeah. Then final image of the movie, Fraser goes to the Buddhist shrine. He opens up the curtains and he looks in, he laughs, and we see what's on the other side. It's a mirror reflecting his face back. And Fraser just kind of like chuckles and laughs. And then we cut to black. Directed by Hikari.
Yeah.
That's the movie.
Because it's not that, you know, he's expected to find a statue of a dragon on the other side of the mm-hmm. curtains or something, but it's just a mirror.
It's just a mirror.
Yeah. Like the guy was just praying to the concept of self.
Mm-hmm. Great movie. The audience clapped in the theater. It was really good. We can't really answer much in terms of post-text because the movie just now released. But I know it's getting great reviews. Sadly, it's coming out the same weekend as Wicked.
Yeah.
So, in terms of its opening box office numbers, probably not going to do so well. But this movie...
It did fine. It's $3.2 million opening weekend. For a movie like that, it's pretty pretty fine.
I wonder... I don't see anything about what the budget was on this movie. Probably wouldn't have those numbers out just yet, I imagine. It's a lovely, lovely little movie. Highly recommend people go see it in theaters. In terms of the Brendan Fraser echelon of it all, I obviously know you probably like this more than The Whale.
Oh, this is Citizen Kane compared to The Whale.
Okay. Well, I think this is a,
that's like that meme right. where it's like
easy.
Thermonuclear bomb versus coughing baby.
Relax. No, Whale's still good. But like in terms of like his Oscar win follow up, I think this is a
this versus the Whale.
In terms of like the Oscar follow up project being Rental Family, I think it was a wonderful choice for Fraser. He's really settled into the like, I think going into like a heartfelt, feel good movie that's got themes of family and love and connection and loneliness. Like it's a great follow up from The Whale into doing something that feels very grounded in
for what he's trying to set up the next phase of his career to be.
Yeah,
it was the right choice.
It was the absolutely
it's a
the
very
right
good choice. Choice for
well
him.
Well said. The next phase of his career he's trying to set up for is the perfect choice. Yeah,
like he's clearly like I would say he's trying to move into. I would say like a Tom Hanks E zone.
Yeah,
is kind of where he's like. Trying to position himself at
a little bit, yeah. I
like,
agree.
Tom Hanks doesn't exclusively do like,
which is why I'm not that excited about this new Mummy announcement.
A Mummy 4. I like the directors they hired, so I'm they hired Radio Silence to do it, which is like, yeah, cool. I'll see it.
What have they done? What are they?
They did Scream 5 and 6.
Have you seen Scream 5 and 6?
People like them. I haven't seen them, but
they were okay.
They
Scream
did.
And
they did
were
Abigail,
just...
which I liked. Which is a movie about the ballerina kid who kills people. They did Ready or Not.
Okay, Ready or Not's good.
Yeah. I like them as a concept. I like that they hired an interesting filmmaker to do it instead of like, don't worry, guys, we got Ruben Fleischer coming in.
Yeah,
Ruben Fleischer, I should say.
I don't know. I just like I don't want to see Fraser like get ripped. Again,
he's definitely not going to get ripped. I do not see a world where that happens.
But like, then it's like the original concept is like the action comedy aspect of it all. Like, I worry which direction either way it goes with the casting choices. I'm like, either Fraser is like the same size as he is, and it becomes more of a comedic joke, or he slims down a little bit, gets bulky, and just I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's like 50, so I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm really skeptical of the Mummy 4 casting. I'm going to make it clear here and now. I would like to be wrong. Yeah. I would love to be wrong.
I'd love to love the Mummy 4.
I would love to
love
the Mummy 4.
Which they are saying is technically going to be Mummy 3 because they're going to pretend Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Oh, are they?
They're okay, fully going to ignore Tomb of the Dragon Emperor is what they are pitching.
Them and Emotemp team up.
Okay. I told you my pitch.
We should say
I texted
it.
My pitch for Mummy 4 is Rick O'Connell and Emotep have to team up to like rob a casino or something. It has like no like mummy lore or anything in it, but like imagine like, you know, there's the casino guards and they have the guns in front of the doorway and there's just, you see a little bit of sand fall down from a vent.
Oh my God.
And they're like, who? Huh? And then like the mummy comes out made of sand and attacks them.
To
be clear, this is actually a bad idea, and I'm saying it because it's a little silly.
Yeah,
they should not actually do a casino robbery movie with Rick O'Connell and Emotep. I hope Emotep's in it.
What's he doing?
I'd like to see him again.
What's the guy that plays
Arnold Vosloo? I don't think he's doing much.
He was in G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
Yeah, that was like 16 years ago.
I know. That was a while ago.
Just bring Emotep back. I don't fucking know. Bring everyone back. Why not?
Yeah.
But I think Brendan's making smart moves career wise. I think Rental Family, this Dwight D. Eisenhower movie that he's doing, and Mummy 4 are kind of like, it's a good like old triptych there.
Yeah.
Three different types of movies to kind of reestablish your star power. And I think this is like, I would not say I loved Rental Family. I liked it a lot.
Really?
Yeah. Like I would say it's like a very solid.
I give it an 8, maybe even 8.5.
Yeah, I would go like a 7 or 8. I liked it a lot. It's very well. It's the type of movie that there used to be a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of a feel good dramedy.
Yeah.
With a movie star, well made, good production value.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you think a few times. It just makes you feel good. It's a capital M movie. Like you go to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
When you describe movie, this is like what people should like. This is like what should be populating our cinemas.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah.
It was good. This would be a movie I'd love to like just have on Blu-ray on my shelf. Yeah.
just to have. Throw it on every now and again.
And this is a good movie to watch with your like maturing family.
Yeah.
Like if you're out of high school, out of college, or you're a working adult, your parents are still with you in good relationship and you want a good family movie night, I think this would be a perfect adult family movie night.
Yeah. I'd say this movie can, it kind of would fit like in a modern family, like a Forrest Gump-esque role.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except maybe without disparaging Abbie Hoffman. But it's good. I liked it a lot. I'm glad Brendan had this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it exists. I enjoyed watching it.
Do you think he's going to get another Oscar now?
I don't think he's going to get an Oscar. This is kind of a stacked year. But I think like...
Who's like the main like front runners so far?
Well, Leo, one battle after another.
Yeah.
I would have to like... let me look up the Oscar prediction list again because my brain is mush.
Frankenstein,
Hamnet, Jay Kelly, Marty Supreme, Sentimental Value, Sinners. These are all things that are still percolating. I think the Leo, Timothy Chalamet, Ethan Hawke for Blue Moon, Michael B. Jordan for Sinners, Wagner Moura for The Secret Agent.
You looked up the Reddit thread, didn't you?
No, I looked up the Variety article.
Oh, I looked up the Reddit thread.
Just because I've seen a few of these movies and my brain is, like I said, mush. I don't think Brendan's going to squeeze in there, but I think that he...
Yeah, I'm looking at it and you're right. It is a very stacked year.
It's a stacked year. George Clooney is not in the list of best actor. And he is in a movie that could get him in there.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about it too, and it's like, I can see Rental Family just not getting anything, and not for the sake of how the quality of the movie. It's just it really is a stacked year. Like I'm looking at Best Original Screenplay, and like Sentimental Value, Marty Supreme.
There's a decent chance Rental Family like sneaks into something, but
yeah, like one little thing.
Yeah,
it won't count as international film.
No. It's an American production. It's a Searchlight film.
That was shot in Japan.
Yeah.
It's always weird. International film. Whole other subject.
Yeah.
That I don't want to talk about.
It used to be called foreign language film.
Yeah.
Now it's just international film.
But even the concept international movie, because almost like half the movies that are made now are all international.
Well, it's the weird thing of like the Oscars are the American like film like society essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like an attempt to like, oh, we'll credit. But now like international films are getting Best Picture nominations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's raising the question of, do we still need this category? But then also like, this is a great opportunity to highlight films that people might not have seen. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions. They're adding a Best Casting award this year, which is good.
In the Oscars?
Yeah.
Just casting. For the casting director?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is great.
That is good.
They're adding best stunts in the next few years.
Ooh.
Which is very good.
I've always said, like, I think an Oscar category that should be is best micro-budget feature.
Mm-hmm. Just something, like, super small.
Like, best feature made under, like, $10 million. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's like just the fact that you can be like in the nomination list of like best picture under mm-hmm. under 10 million.
Yeah.
That opens up a lot of like, you know, 5-6 nominations that are movies that like, oh, like you would never have heard of these movies.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
They would have had a blip on Netflix or Hulu and then they would have gone way down the list.
And then it's like, well, that's technically what the Indie Spirit Awards are there for. And it's just like, it just...
Yeah.
Hollywood's so crazy. I love it.
All right.
I think this movie is like it's going to be a decently solid performer. I think it'll have long legs culturally for Brendan. I think a lot of people will watch this when it hits streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll stick around. It's just like, that's a nice little movie.
Go see it in theaters, guys.
Go see it if you have
not. Well, you listen to this whole podcast.
Yeah, Thanksgiving weekend coming up. Great opportunity. Go with your family.
This is see a rental great,
great Thanksgiving
this
movie.
This is a great Thanksgiving movie.
Yes. Unfortunately, an even better Thanksgiving movie is coming out on Thanksgiving. Wake Up Dead Man. Just like the Knives Out movies are the ultimate Thanksgiving movies.
Mm.
They are Thanksgiving like as a concept.
Okay.
Like what you go to see.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Go see Rental Family with your family this weekend. It'll be a good time. You'll have fun.
You will. And yeah, I think I've said all my final thoughts.
Yeah, I think I've about summed it up, right?
Thank you all so much for listening. You have to do the outro.
I do have to do the outro.
Yeah.
I've been operating off my phone today because I have a lot of things I'm doing after this recording, so I don't want to bring my laptop.
Yeah.
I'm stacking my weekend.
I can do it if you want me to.
No, I got it. Okay. Thank you so much for listening to this episode on Rental Family. Hope you enjoyed this whole soiree back into the Fraser's Edge zone. We'll be back on Fraser's Edge for, I believe, Pressure, in which Brendan Fraser plays Dwight D. Eisenhower. The first of, actually, it might be the second. We will be having two movies about Dwight D. Eisenhower on this
possibly,
podcast.
Yeah.
No, we are, because the other one's Robin plays Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Oh, right.
So we're the Dwight corner, Eisen corner, coming up hot. Coming in hot. But thanks so much for listening. Thank you. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe whatever platform you're listening on. Genuinely does help. Follow us on Instagram or Blue Sky. At TravoltingPod, TravoltingPodcast@gmail.com. Reach out to us if you have any questions. If you like the show, please let us know. Thank you to Michael for the music and Becca for the graphic design. And have a great week, folks.
See you next week for Death to Smoochie, back to Robin Williams.
Yeah, Death to Smoochie!